At Firestone Complete Auto Care, we hold our service to the highest standard. That's why we have thousands of ASE-certified technicians nationally. So don't wait any longer. Give us a call and book your next appointment today.
Save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust 5-in-1 Spray Paint lets you choose from five unique spray patterns with a twist of the dial. Use it on a wide range of wood or metal projects for long-lasting results. Choose from over 50 color options available now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News
Talk. As a new study reminds us, keeping the faith is good for your mind and body. But even as we learn that, the Bishop of Limerick admits he can no longer guarantee Sunday Mass in every church in his diocese due to a shortage of priests. Now, joining me to talk about all of this is Father Iggy O'Donovan, parish priest in Feathered in County Tipperary, and Dr. Brendan Kelly, psychiatrist and author of The Science of Happiness. Good morning and welcome to you both. Iggy, we'll talk to you first about the crisis in Limerick. I'm sure Limerick is not alone.
No, it's just that I think Dr. Brendan Leahy may be a step ahead of some of their other lordships on this one. But no, it's not alone. The fact is, as presently constituted, and I emphasise that one, Pat, as presently constituted, the Catholic Church in Ireland is facing a demographic nightmare, tsunami. And I don't want to sound exaggerated there, but we're literally in the last chance saloon, if you like, in that most of us are old age pensioners. I become one myself next week, incidentally. And demographically, that says only one thing is going in one direction. So therefore, as presently constituted, so what Brendan Leahy has been saying is that we certainly will have to look maybe at another modus operandi, another way of getting things done, because the way it is being done now is fast running out of road, no doubt.
The problem is that for certain things, you absolutely need a priest for the Eucharist, for the sacrament of confession, for confirmations you need. Usually it's a bishop, but a priest, I'm sure, could do it.
Yes.
But there are limited roles that the laity can play. But eventually, as you put it, you run out of road.
Yes, but the other thing as well, Pat. If the list you've just given me there about confirmation and Eucharist and so forth, if that were a major issue in many people's lives, but quite apart from the fact that there's a few of us there to do it, equally on the other side, as I look down the church, it's sometimes very difficult to pick out a person under 50 in the pews. And certainly that should ask us to draw our own conclusions there as well. So quite apart from what priests or lay people might or might not do, on the other side, the number of takers, so to speak, is getting fewer and fewer and fewer in this country. But there is something I would add, Pat. The church such as we know in Ireland and the structures which we've taken so much for granted, in fact, it's a relatively recent phenomenon, at maximum 150 years, maximum. So the structures which we have taken so much for granted, and in fact, pre-famine Ireland, we had a very different church and a very different laity and the way they interacted with church. But what we inherited in post-famine Ireland, Cardinal Cullen and all the rest, and the Romanization of the Irish church, that's actually a fairly recent phenomenon. And
okay, so the idea of every town having a Catholic church and indeed other denominational churches as well, that you're saying is the latter part of the 19th century when all
very,
of this...
Very, very much so. Yeah.
So,
very,
so,
very much so.
What was the pre-famine model?
Yeah, it was very much more communitarian. And if you like, you had... I'm painting now in very broad brush.
Mm-hmm.
You had, the local community, the local holy wells, the local patterns, the local comings and goings. You always had the things like the wakes and that, which were an intrinsic part of Irish Catholicism. And indeed, probably one of the more positive things, because there was tremendous support there in times of difficulty. But what we inherited after the famine, and especially with the Cullen Church, was very much, much more streamlined. Roman devotions, Roman this, Roman that, our Eucharistic processions, our benedictions, and fiercely structured chain, a very carefully forged chain of command. Before that, we were a much, much looser setup.
So just to try and get a handle, you know, with a population of 8 million on the island, the idea of a priest in every town, was that realistic, or were priests more likely to be travelling from place to place?
They were much more likely to be travelling. There were far fewer of them, incidentally. And the other thing, when we talk about the numbers of priests that you would have remembered from your young days, the huge phenomenon in Ireland here was certainly probably the 30s through to the 60s. You're talking about a 30-year period. Before that, the numbers were much smaller. That explosion, which came probably with the atmosphere in the Free State and the Eucharistic Congress and all that went with it, and Catholicism very much identified with the new state, and quote-unquote, I know it's a cliche now, De Valera's Ireland, it was a relatively recent phenomenon. And I'd be interested in what Brendan has on some of that now, because we have taken it so much for granted that this is the way things always were. In fact, it wasn't the way things always were. Mm. And certainly what we've been used to in my lifetime and for the couple of generations before that, we are living, Pat, to see the end of that now.
All right. We're literally obviously,
the end of that.
Iggy, in that period you're talking about, and prior to that, of course, bigger families. You had maybe several males, only one of whom would inherit the farm, and the church was generous in its subsidy of the education of people to the priesthood.
It was, and it carried certainly with it, and sometimes in more recent years I've seen this in places like Poland and so forth, it carried with it also a certain prestige. You were on a pedestal and there was a certain prestige in having a priest in the family. Today, whatever type of prestige you're looking for, that's not where you go about it. Certainly the average family today, I don't think that. But, it was there, and families were very happy to support them. And incidentally, it's interesting that the mothers were particularly very happy to support them. Even in my own case, my father would have been rather, he was a Catholic, but he went to communion once a year, that type of thing, whereas my mother would have gone every day. And so the model certainly had a huge influence there, and it carried with it a certain prestige. It doesn't carry that anymore now. But as I say, it was, in Albert Renman's words, I think overall it probably was a temporary little arrangement.
The question of what Catholicism was like before the famine, I mean, was it, you know, an Irish solution to an Irish problem? Was it more pagan when you talk about holy places, holy wells, superstitions and all of that? And then it got, if you like, manners put on it by the Romanization of it?
Yes, well, it became very highly structured. The diocese became very highly organized. Every parish had its parish priest, the carefully forged chain of command, the canon law. Everything was X, Y, and Z very, very much. Before that, it was more a happy-go-lucky, hit-and-miss type of church. And, of course, it's also worth remembering, you were dealing with a frightfully poor people. They were really, you were talking about, O'Connell tried to do something for them to get them together and unify them some way. But really, you were dealing with a nation of beggars who were on their knees.
Yeah. Now, it brings us to, I suppose, the deficit in people's lives who are used to going to Mass every day in their local church, and that may be denied them in future. I mean, you might have enough numbers in the priesthood for the fewer and fewer Catholics, but unfortunately, they're not all in one place. They're scattered right throughout the country.
Yes,
that's the issue.
We're very thinly spread. And if anything, there's probably too many masses on, but with very few going to any of them. Rather than there may be a case which some people have made, including Father Brendan Hoban there in the West, that there may be a case for having fewer and putting more resources into them, more meaningful. Because that's something that strikes me very much. The only country I know from the point of view of Catholicism other than Ireland is Italy, where I spent a lot of time. And what struck me there was that the little emphasis they had on the mass going, if you like, but the average Italian Catholic was so proud of Catholic architecture, Catholic art, Catholic music, all that thing we associate with the Italian Catholicism down the centuries. They will talk about Puccini and Verdi and so forth, Michelangelo and his works, and they are very, very proud of what they as Catholics, with very little emphasis on the mass going, if you like, and hardly any emphasis at all, interestingly enough, on sexual morality. whereas we, all our eggs were in that basket.
All right. Well, Brendan has been listening to all of that. Dr. Brendan Kelly, psychiatrist and author of The Science of Happiness. And this is on the back of a study reminding us that keeping the faith is good for mind and body. Brendan, you know, what is likely to happen to people who no longer have recourse to, if you like, the physical presence at their place of worship for Mass?
Well, the research about happiness and well-being that we're talking about, it's a new study in the Journal of the American Medical Association summarizing around 370 studies, and it confirms, as you said, that identifying as religious or spiritual in this study is associated with better physical and mental health. But what's really interesting in this broad field of research is the question of whether this works through participation, through community, through meeting up, or whether this works through belief, the fact of having faith, in addition to the community that often comes with religion. And it appears that both matter. So listening there to Father Iggy describe the church both now and in the past is so interesting, because we might be looking at a shift towards people who, if you like, truly believe. I think it's fair to say that over the past 100 years or so, a large number of participants in particularly the Roman Catholic Church in Ireland might not have been very strong believers. So I think there might be a shift happening, if you like, or a focusing or a concentration on people who have, if you like, real faith, as opposed to cultural or social participation alone.
Now, the question of, as you say, belief, it works both ways, both in the physical attendance at a place of worship, which, you know, when you still see large congregations assembling at Catholic churches in America, for example, it is very much a social occasion. It's a community occasion. I don't know how sincere the people are in the prayers they say. No one can judge that, I suppose. But is it possible to have that happiness just in isolation because you believe in something?
Yeah, well, I mean, believing in something appears to help in addition to the community events that you describe. Of course, there's this very interesting trend emerging the past few decades known as SBNR, which is spiritual but not religious. And this is sort of a growing identified group who say while they don't accord with any known religion, they nonetheless regard themselves as being spiritual. And this is a very broad tent, including people who occasionally have feelings of well-being on one hand, and other people who have quite profound religious experience when they're, you know, sitting in the forest or climbing up a tree or something, and they feel a genuine spiritual connection to the earth and so forth. And there isn't a lot of research about this at the moment. It's a rather ill-defined thing, but this notion of spiritual but not religious is probably contributing to the decline in some of the organized religious practices that Father Iggy is outlining so clearly.
Now, some of the comments coming in, modern Ireland is a different place, says this texter. I'm a mother. I would not encourage my children to join any organization that excludes women in so many ways. And that, you know, it seems as clear as the noses on our faces that the church is, you know, deliberately or for tradition or for doctrinal reasons, missing a trick here.
Yes, I mean, absolutely, Pat. Those of us who have argued that, but and Pat, you and I have spoken of this, I think, possibly 30 years ago.
Sure.
And on and off on the various programs you've been involved in, Pat, it has come up again and again and again. And really, talk about when we mentioned the women priests or other things, really, we're going over so much of the old ground. The mention that was made by Brendan there about America, and that's interesting. The very high levels of engagement with organized religion in America. Unfortunately, the Roman Catholic Church in America has very much become the Republican Party at prayer. Very traditional, very Trumpite, very intolerant, and really, I'd be greatly concerned. As bad as we are here, we're not that bad.
Yeah, and that's probably a very interesting conversation for another day, the republicanization of the Roman Catholic Church in America. So many Irish people will say they're not religious, but in time of darkness will turn to prayer, so says Margaret. What about that, Brendan, the idea that, you know, you can turn it on to get solace and then turn it off again?
Well, it's certainly something that we do, something people do all the time. At moments of crisis, they pray to a God that at other times they claim does not exist. It's like someone once said to me, I don't believe in God, but I still wouldn't like to make him angry. So we do reach for these things. And we've done research about happiness and well-being in Ireland, and religious belief regarding yourself as religious consistently shows up as one of the predictors of happiness. Interestingly, political belief is also important. And research all over the world shows that right-wing political beliefs are more associated with happiness than left-wing. So the more conservative you are, the more sort of the happier you will report being, probably from a sense of certainty. And of course, religion is attractive for people who can't live with uncertainty, because when you join a religion, a lot of life's difficult moral questions are, if you like, answered by that religion. So there is comfort, there is structure to a lot of this, just as there is with right-wing political beliefs. And that might account for why they have converged, as you're pointing out, in the US.
A final question to you both, and that's about what we call the virtual world, the digitization of communication and so on, attending funeral services or whatever via Zoom, a camera in the church and so on. Given that, you know, religion is about the invisible a lot of the time, it's about belief in something that, you know, physically is not there. Can virtual services supplant the physical services? Iggy?
They certainly did. Like, all our world now is pre and post COVID, isn't it? And they certainly did during that period. But what I did notice, all right, and Brendan might be interested in this, that during lockdown and so forth, I did come across a good few people who did tell me that they felt a certain loneliness, and that even going down to the old church in the morning, even if there was only 20 elderly people there, to go there and buy your newspaper afterwards, that was literally part of the social part of your day. But you're absolutely right, Pat, but I'm afraid that's where we're going. Everything is coming virtual now, whether we're teaching in classes or preaching homilies or whatever we're doing. That's a fact.
And Brendan, that supplanting the physical experience of religion with the virtual experience?
I think the distinction between virtual and in real life is becoming blurred. But I think particularly there's a younger generation who understand with great subtlety the difference, more than, say, I do, someone for whom the internet and virtual things arrived, you know, during my life. Because, of course, virtual experiences can't replace meeting someone, shaking a hand, getting a hug. And, you know, I'm reminded the journalist Bernard Levin in 1978, he wrote in the Times newspaper, when computers were just beginning and they were kind of known as, you know, the silicon chip, he wrote, "The silicon chip will change everything except everything that matters, and the rest will still be up to us."
On that note, my thanks to you both for joining us for that conversation. Dr. Brendan Kelly, psychiatrist, author of The Science of Happiness, and Father Iggy O'Donovan, parish priest in Feathered in County Tipperary.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
At Firestone Complete Auto Care, we hold our service to the highest standard. That's why we have thousands of ASE-certified expert technicians nationally. So if you're looking for car service that's got your back on the road, choose the place that treats every car like their own and every customer like family. Don't wait any longer. Call your local Firestone Complete Auto Care and book your next appointment today.